of weeks ago, I introduced the overall model and some of the materials and the different resources that go with it, and we focused on the preview strategy. And today we're going to be focusing on Click and Clunk, and we'll also again be looking at some classroom resources and probably talk a little bit also about some grouping considerations when kids are working together during reading. And we have a couple of polls. We have such a small group, but I wanted to see who was here, who had been here on the first session. So here you'll see your first poll. Were you at the first PD session, yes or no? Please let me know. And if you weren't, I would just like to know what your role is. And so there are two additional polls, one your role in the school and the grade level that you focus on. Oh, great. We have a secondary teacher, 9 through 12. Wonderful. Okay, so it looks like, let's see, they're coming in. We have some specialists. And actually, if you wouldn't mind, the four specialist teachers, can you just put into the chat feature what kind of specialist you are, if you're a special education teacher, a reading teacher, ELD, that would be great for me to know. And as soon as I see those, we can move on. Fourth and fifth grade teachers, excellent. Okay, high school special education. This is going to be wonderful for you. Inclusion teacher, that's Allison, great. Reading. Terrific. Good. Okay, so let's get started. We'll talk a little bit about preview, and I know that the webinar was recorded, and I'm also going to show you at the end some of our online resources. So if you wanted to go through independently a professional development training module on the CSR preview, you can do that on your own through our free website. So that's just something to keep in mind. As a review, the CSR preview is it has a set of steps, and all of the strategies in CSR have a similar set of steps, and that's so that the teacher and the students become familiar with a routine that is repeated regardless of the reading. So as a review, the preview strategy involves, it's led by the teacher, and the teacher begins by stating the topic. Today we're going to read about blank, today we're going to learn about, and then students spend just a couple of minutes brainstorming what they already know about the topic, and the teacher is going to give students a question that will guide them or focus them, hopefully, to make some connections with what the topic is about. The kids spend about a minute or two, depending on the grade level, just writing anything they can think of that is connected to the brainstorm prompt. And then they turn to a partner or in a small group and they share. And we talked a lot last time about the importance of the sharing in this part of the CSR model. So these are kids a lot of times who are not very successful readers. They don't enter into a reading situation with high engagement sometimes. And by sharing, by writing down, having that think and wait time, having something that is correct to be able to share with your group or with a partner right away, really sets the stage for higher engagement in the process throughout reading and, you know, for when things get a little bit more difficult. So the kids will write on their own first, and then they will turn to a partner or a small group and briefly share. And then the teacher might decide to build a bit of background knowledge. But again, we're talking 5 to 10 minutes for a preview. So this is not a 30-minute lecture where the teacher goes through and teaches the students everything that the reading is about. We want the kids to learn from what they read. And in order to do that, they need to be focused. They need to have just a little bit of information. They need to have their interest piqued, and then they are the ones that can learn from the reading. The teacher may choose to present a couple of key vocabulary concepts or maybe introduce a proper noun that is going to be tricky for the kids, and that is done using multiple modalities wherever possible. So you want to think of one way in addition to just saying what the word means and writing what the word means. So it could be a short video, it could be a picture, it could be a demonstration in your classroom, but there's one other way at least the kids can latch on to what the meaning is. And you also want to go into the text and flag those key vocabulary words so when the kids come to them while reading, they'll recognize them. And then the teacher is going to state the purpose for reading, and then it's turned over to the students. So that's the CSR preview, and that one is quick. It takes about 5-10 minutes max. And I think we just had one teacher who tried it, so I don't know, don't want to put you on the spot, but if you did try it, how did the CSR preview go? What questions do you have, and are there any tips I can offer? So I see that Melissa is typing, and we'll wait to see if she has any thoughts for us. Okay, or maybe we are not going to have some insights, but do know that you can, you know, be great to try the preview, and it would be great to debrief it. And we're going to do the same with Click and Clunk. So we'll get into Click and Clunk today, and then I will suggest that you go back and try it in your classroom, and then you know, we can debrief it in the next session, which is next Thursday. So here is the model for collaborative strategic reading. We have pre-reading activities. That's the CSR preview that we just talked about. We have during reading strategies. So the two during reading strategies are Click and Clunk and Get the Gist. Click and Clunk is a metacognitive strategy that really helps kids understand to monitor their reading and then to take some action when understanding breaks down. And Get the Gist is a main idea strategy. And as we talked about last time, we're going to break the text into generally three sections. It might be two, and sometimes it might be four. But prior to reading, the teacher is going to break the text into sections, and then students will read one small section, and then they will stop, and they will do the Click and Clunk strategy and the Get the Gist strategy that we'll talk about next time. So let's get into it. And we use that icon, that key. This is sort of unlocking the meaning of the text. That's why I have it there like that. So what happens when you're reading? When everything's going well, things click. And, you know, sometimes teachers use the analogy of cruise control and a traffic jam. Depending on the age of your students, for older students, I often use a skateboarding analogy. So I say to kids, you know, have you ever heard a skateboard is going along the sidewalk? And you can kind of hear things clicking along when things are going well. Click, click, click as the skateboard goes down the sidewalk. And then maybe the kid wants to do a trick, and the trick involves popping up onto a park bench. And they try it, and it doesn't quite go the way they wanted it to. So what do? They rethink, and they try again. And that is how we want to think about the Click and Clunk strategy. For younger kids, when you're trying to explain to them, you might use, you know, a story about putting together a toy train set. You know, and you get your tracks all set up, and then you put your train on. And if you don't have the tracks set quite right, you might have the train clunk, you know, it falls off, and you have to make a repair. You have to do something differently to get that train to go nicely around the track. So that's what we're doing with reading. When things are going well, when you read, you click along, you're barely thinking about anything. But if you don't understand something, clunk, you got to stop and take some action. So probably all of us can think of a time when you didn't understand something you read. You know, what were you reading? Why did it happen? And what did you do about it? So more advanced, more proficient readers usually take action. They make some decisions when understanding breaks down. And I can think recently of a time when I was reading and understanding broke down. So I happen to be reading the new Jonathan Franzen novel called Purity. And it's, you know, 500, getting up into 600 pages. And I was reading the other night, and I noticed that there's one particular character that I just don't care for. His story doesn't resonate with me. And so there I was reading along, and I just kind of, you know, spaced out. I was doing other things. I think I was working on my shopping list for the next day. And then I got to the next section of text, and I realized I was missing some important information. So I thought, oh, I need to go. I missed something in that section I wasn't paying attention to, and I've got to go back and reread. I need to repair my understanding so that I can continue reading and not have it interrupt my comprehension. So that's what we're trying to get kids to be better at, because many kids get to the bottom of the page, they don't know what they read, and they really don't have any strategies to figure it out. And this only is meaningful when stuff gets hard. You know, things that are automatic, it's not quite so important. So let's think about why understanding does break down. Often it's because the text is too difficult. So the sentence structure is confusing. Sentences are very long. They have a lot of commas and clauses and descriptive words, and kids just get lost, and so they tune out. The vocabulary could be too difficult. The content, it's so unfamiliar that you just feel like you don't have much of a chance of understanding. Those are some reasons. And sometimes you're just not paying attention. So, you know, maybe you're tired. Maybe you're hungry. Maybe you're preoccupied. Something happened the period before or during recess, and you're upset about it, or you're just your mind is distracted and it's hard to pay attention. I put in here, maybe you're an adolescent. You know, you just never know with adolescents when they're going to be on and when their brain is going to be really focused on some other things that are going on. Maybe you're in a noisy or a stressful environment. It's very difficult for you to focus and concentrate. It could be, and it's very likely, you're not interested in what you're reading. So in my example that I just gave about the Jonathan Franzen novel, that I think is what happened to me, is I just wasn't interested in that character, and so I lost my understanding. And sometimes you lose your train of thought, you lose your focus and concentration when you don't know why you are reading. And I think this is something that happens to students a lot in classrooms, is they know that they are supposed to do something, and they just don't know why. Either they missed the explanation or it did not connect for them, and that can be very problematic. So these are the reasons why understanding might break down. And what we want to do is get kids to focus in a little bit more by using metacognition. So metacognition, as you know, is thinking about your thinking. It has to do with monitoring understanding. It has to do with selecting an action. What are you going to do? How are you going to do it? Why and when? And then in addition to selecting that action, you actually have to do it. So if you got to think to yourself, oh, I don't understand what I just read. What am I going to do about it? And now I'm going to take that action. And researchers who have looked into metacognition have actually found that people in general are not particularly metacognitive. So we don't want to blame it on kids who are having difficulty reading, because all of us are not particularly metacognitive, especially when we're not being successful at something. So a few of the areas that have been researched when people are taking tests, and these are adults, by the way, writing grammatically, thinking logically, medical lab technicians' knowledge of medical terminology, problem-solving skills, these are areas where people tend not to be very metacognitive when things go wrong. And the list goes on and on. And the quote says, people tend to be blissfully unaware of their incompetence. Insight about deficiencies in their intellectual and social skills. They lack that insight about what went wrong. And although this is kind of a negative way to think about it, I do think it's important that if we need to take action, we made a mistake, we need to be aware that a mistake happened, and we need to know what to do about it. If people lack the skills to produce correct answers, they are also cursed with an inability to know when their answers or anyone else's are right or wrong. And essentially what the take-home message here is that metacognitive abilities, metacognitive skills really are needed in order to be successful in a lot of different contexts, reading being just one of them. So how do we help kids to be more metacognitive while they're reading? One of the ways that we can do that is by teaching them a strategy for how to be more metacognitive that they will get some success out of. So the first thing we do is we tell kids and we practice, while reading, monitor your understanding. Start to think about what makes sense and what doesn't make sense. And the click and clunk strategy is kind of a proxy for stopping yourself and doing a self-check about what makes sense and what doesn't. So the second step, after reading a section of text, stop and identify any words or ideas that you do not understand. Write those clunks in your learning log. And those of you that were here last week know what the learning log is, and those that weren't, you can find it on the website that I'm going to show you, and it's also in the handouts file, I think, for all of the webinars that go together. The third step, you're going to work with your group to use fix-up strategies to figure out the meaning of the unknown words or ideas. And then you're going to note which strategy you used. So you're going to circle the strategies in your learning log. And then, this is a really important step, you're going to put the definition back in the sentence to be sure it makes sense. So before you continue, you're going to find those words or ideas that are confusing. You're going to talk about them with your group and figure out what they mean. And then you put that definition back in the sentence to make sure it makes sense. Click and clunk is used during reading. And as I mentioned, students stop and find the meaning of their clunks at the end of each section of text. And this is a text I showed you last time, but you can see how it has already been divided into three sections. So section one is those first three paragraphs, and students would read that entire section, and then they would stop and go back and identify words or ideas that they didn't understand and figure them out. Then they would go on to get the main idea, and then they would move on to reading the next section. So why is click and clunk important? Well, as I said, monitoring understanding and identifying clunks is a metacognitive skill that is essential for comprehension of difficult text. Click and clunk helps students to be more active and engaged readers. It gives them tools for what to do. They're not so helpless when things go wrong. And good readers use different strategies to figure out the meaning of words and difficult ideas while reading. And the idea with click and clunk is that although we just present four strategies, students will eventually become more resourceful. Sometimes those strategies don't work, but kids who get into the practice of doing something when understanding breaks down will keep looking for something to do because they will be more invested in understanding what they read. For English learners, if you happen to have English learners in your class, it's more complicated to understand, monitor understanding when reading in a second language or an additional language. English learners tend to focus more at the word level than taking in all of the meaning, so they can get hung up on individual words. And click and clunk gives several ways to approach unfamiliar vocabulary, including the use of cognates or connections to students' native language. And we'll talk about that in a bit. One of the things to be aware of is, what is the role of vocabulary instruction and CSR click and clunk? So I want to be sure that everyone is aware that teaching students to use fix-up strategies is just one part of vocabulary instruction. It's a metacognitive strategy that's disguised as a vocabulary strategy, actually, because it's less about the individual words and the understanding their meaning than trying to get the meaning overall from the text. Vocabulary instruction, as you know, is most effective when teachers provide explicit instruction, offer multiple meaningful opportunities for practice, and actively involve students in the process. So words that are identified during click and clunk can become important vocabulary words that teachers then follow up on and do other activities and provide those multiple exposures throughout the week and over multiple weeks. But just be aware that the understanding that kids will get from those words and ideas during the process of CSR is going to help them with the comprehension. But to really deeply know those words, they're going to have to go further with them. So what is a clunk? A clunk is a word or concept you do not know how to define in the context of the reading. Okay? So you're going along and there is some word or group of words that you do not know how to define. And it's not what you can define in your head, for kids anyways, because we can't see inside their head. It's you have to be able to come up with a verbal definition and be able to write that definition down on paper. If you can't do that, then it's a clunk. A clunk is not a proper noun. So proper nouns are these tricky kinds of places and names that pop up in reading all the time. And things like context clues are not going to help you necessarily figure out a proper noun. So that's not usually a word we tell kids to focus on as clunks. A clunk is also not a word you know but can't read correctly. So the example I'm giving here is sergeant. It's kind of a difficult spelling word. And if a student says, oh, I have a clunk, it's the word sergeant. And another student says, oh, I know what that is. That's not sergeant, it's sergeant. And the kid says, oh, I know sergeant, I just read it wrong. You don't have to continue with coming up with the definition and putting it back in the sentence and so on and so forth. That was just a reading mistake. And if the content knowledge is there, then that's not a clunk. You've just solved that problem and you can move on. Another word that's not a clunk is a word with a definition that is provided somewhere else in the text, like the glossary or a side panel. And this can be a little bit confusing, but I've given you a couple of examples, one example from a textbook. So on the left is the text. As money poured in to build the new city, rumors of corruption flew. And then in the kind of side panel, this word is defined, corruption. Dishonest or illegal practices, especially involving money. The reason that this is not a good clunk is the way to figure out this clunk is to copy the definition. And as you know, kids can do that very well with zero thinking involved. So they will learn, oh, there's a word, it's in, you know, underlined, that's probably a clunk. I'm going to copy the definition. I actually don't even have to read it to copy it. And I'm done. And they are no further along with their understanding of the text or the meaning of the word corruption than when they started. So if those words that are in bold and a definition is provided in a textbook or a reading are important, you can handle those as vocabulary terms and teach them using your great vocabulary strategies. But for kids, we want them to identify words that they find are difficult or confusing or that they don't know, and that they can work together to figure out what they mean, not just copy down a definition that they also may not understand. So what are these fix-up strategies? There are four. The first two pertain to using context clues. And as kids go along in school, they really understand what context clues are. What they don't necessarily do is use them to help them understand what the text is about. So for our secondary students, a lot of times we're reminding kids to use a strategy they already have. They just haven't applied it very organically and regularly. So the first strategy, reread the sentence with the clunk and look for key ideas to help you figure out the word. Think about what makes sense. So you can see a lot of this very intentional slowing kids down for a minute. Where is that word again? Let's reread the sentence. Let's think about what makes sense. The second strategy just builds on the first. Reread the sentences before and after the clunk, looking for clues. And that can be expanded to just looking for other places, or it could be the paragraph before, another place where that word is written in the text. But what we're doing is just opening the lens a little bit to see if there's more meaning that we can glean from the text to help us. The third strategy involves morphemic analysis. And here you're going to break the word apart and look for word parts, prefixes, suffixes, root words, or other smaller words you know. And the final fix-up strategy, look for a cognate that makes sense. And a cognate is a word that looks the same or similar and has a similar meaning in more than one language, in English and another language. And we will talk about cognates in a minute. Now, cognates really only work if you have another language that you speak, but it doesn't hurt. If you only have one language and somebody else has more than one, they can use cognates and they can help their colleagues in the classroom figure out words. So, fix-up strategies one and two, reading around the word. And by the way, a student came up with that, these two ways to think about the different fix-up strategies, and I loved that. He said, hey, miss, this is like the first two are like reading around the word, and the second two are reading within the word. And sometimes it helps kids even to visually show them what's happening. Context clues, you're getting bigger, you're widening your lens, and morphemic analysis or cognates, you're really focusing more on that individual word. And it works the same for the ideas, too. So let's see a video of some students using the click and clunk strategy. They are reading the Earth-Friendly Fabrics reading that I just showed you a few minutes as our example text. Those were 7th grade language arts students, just to give you a little bit of context. So what do you think? Use the chat feature and write down any brief thoughts that you have about what you saw in the video. You could answer one of these questions or just write down a thought if something comes to you. What did you like? What questions do you have? How will the click and clunk strategy help your students? So I'll give you just a minute or two to get your thoughts down and I can comment on them. So one question that Allison had is, do the students come up with their own words? And I'm so glad you asked that. That's actually really, really important. The idea with this click and clunk strategy is that the kids are the ones that are responsible for identifying the words that they are struggling with. And what we see is if teachers give too many clunks to students, it's the teacher guessing, essentially, which words or ideas the kids are going to struggle with. And it becomes, again, more passive. I'm going to wait for the teacher to tell me what to do, to tell me which words are important. So if we have it being generated by the students, they're going to pick out the words that they really feel need to be resolved. So that's a great question. Now, what teachers can do is they can have a list of possible clunks. So if the student says, I don't have any, then the teacher might say, oh, well, you know, do you know what this word means? tell me what that word means, just to do a little bit of a check if kids aren't reading too closely. It's true that the kids really help each other, and in fact, I would say for the most part, this is the favorite strategy of kids. And one of the things teachers have to do is actually stop them from, they just want to, you know, go crazy with clunks and just go one to the next. They really love to discuss it, and they like the problem-solving aspect of trying to figure it out. So it can be, you know, a really great way to promote productive group work. Kids seem to naturally want to work well together when they're talking about clunks. There's a question about grouping, and I'm going to hold that one because I'm going to talk about that at the end of the session today. And yes, so grouping is always teacher selected. I don't want to say always. Let me say almost always and highly recommended that the groups are chosen by the teacher and they are heterogeneous. So there are mixed mixed interests, mixed reading abilities, mixed social skills and group work skills in those groups so kids can work together. And the kids definitely are coaching each other. One of the things that I like about this particular example is if that student had raised his hand in front of the whole group and said, oh, I know what noxious means. It means like when you want to throw up. People might have laughed at him. It really could have been very embarrassing, and it could have made him not want to share in the future. But that little mistake of mixing up the word noxious and nauseous, which is, you know, really quite understandable, was handled really well in the group. They had a little laugh over it, and then they moved on. And the kids are kind of sorting it out. So one of the things you notice is they're almost rehearsing what the definition is. You know, they sort of say it a few times, and then when they all feel good, then they write it down. Okay, so let's look at a couple of examples, and thank you very much for using that chat feature. I'm going to ask you to do it, I think, maybe once or twice more. So let's look at these different. So remember, fix-up strategy number one is just rereading the sentence. And if you know what? If kids can do that every time, they are going to be so far ahead of where most of them are right now. I'll tell you, that's for sure. In the summer, the birds molt or lose their feathers. We have a word or that is helping. Because it's signaling that a definition is going to follow. And you can see that by rereading that sentence, most kids are going to be able to see that molt means to lose your feathers. Peregrine falcons are raptors or birds of prey. That's a very similar example. Now, on this next example, a snake's body is very supple. It can bend easily. It can fit in small spaces. So here we have another issue, and that is by just reading that one sentence, it doesn't give us enough context for what the word supple means. It could mean rigid, it could mean scary, it could mean anything. But if you keep reading a little bit more, it can bend easily, it can fit in small places, that gives a much better definition of what the word supple means. In the early days, gold was transported in wagons. So here we have more than one fix-up strategy going on. So we have fix-up strategy one. We do have some hints that something was happening with gold in these wagons. And, you know, carry, something like that, could be a word that would come out of that from the context of that sentence. But we also have some important word parts. So the word trans means across, and port means carry. So if you are working with students and you're teaching prefixes and suffixes, so if you're a content area teacher, your kids are learning prefixes and suffixes and roots in some of their classes, those can be used in CSR to help kids figure out word meanings. And in the resource booklet that kids are given, and I'm going to hopefully have time, or I'll at least show you where you can find it, all of these handouts for students can be downloaded from the website. And you can also, if you're interested, you can buy a toolkit that has a flip book with resources for kids, including the fix-up strategies and including common prefixes and suffixes and so on. I always have liked to give my students papers that they can write on. So there are a prefix list with the most common, but then there are blank slots at the end of it. So if we come across one that's important, but we don't know the meaning, we can add it to our list, kind of like a make your own dictionary. In the next example, the Department of Motor Vehicles requires a thumbprint to get a driver's license. Here we simply have a compound word, but sometimes kids don't recognize them and that can hang them up. But by rereading and realizing, oh, a thumbprint, I get it, then they're set. And the fourth one invokes a cognate. So students should participate during class. If you have students who speak Spanish in your class, then participar might be a way that they will be able to figure out what the meaning of that word is. So common prefixes, and depending on what age group you're teaching and what content area you focus on in science, sometimes we have teachers who will just give kids common science prefixes. Or you can, there are lists of 100 most common prefixes, and those are available on the website. Some suffixes. These are a little bit hard, but they do tell you what kind of word it is. So, for example, EST means most, and then there's example largest, the most large. And roots. And then we get to this fix-up strategy number 4, cognates. So let me talk a little bit more about that one. So cognates are words in two languages that share a similar meaning. 30 to 40% of words in English have a related word in Spanish. And lots of other languages have cognates in English as well. And what we're doing here is we are trying to help students activate the full repertoire of their knowledge. So a lot of times in an English-only classroom, students don't think about what they know in another language. And by being very explicit about that and saying to students, is there a word in your language that sounds like this one or that might be similar? Just having that connection is very helpful for students to be able to draw on other resources. And one of the things that research shows very strongly is it makes kids feel smarter and it makes them feel more welcome. So even if they don't have a cognate that's going to be helpful in that moment, just being recognized for having another language and having another resource is something that can be very helpful. And again, fix-up strategy number 4 is only used with students who speak a language other than English. So here's a list of some example cognates, and these are in Spanish. And the resource at the bottom, www.cognates.org, gives lists of cognates in lots of different languages. And typically I tell teachers, we're not asking kids to use a cognate list as a dictionary. It's more a reminder that that resource is available to you. There are also false cognates in Spanish and in other languages as well. So the first one, globe and globo, it's actually, you can sort of see the connection between the globe and the balloon, but it could be confusing. And so the example I have on the bottom, when Luisa looked at the globe, she was surprised to see that Antarctica was so large. So if you thought, oh, I know what globo means in Spanish, it means balloon, then when you remember the last step for click and clunk, you put it back into the sentence. So if you did that, when Luis looked at the balloon, she was surprised to see that Antarctica was so large. That doesn't make sense. And so that's an indicator, oh, that cognate might not be that helpful to me. But I gave it a try. And that's the thing with these strategies. You need to be, we all need to be, and we want our students to be savvy strategy users. And that means they try strategies, but they also recognize when they do not work, because there is no for any discipline any one-size-fits-all strategy. Generally, there are going to be some times when that strategy does not work. So it's your turn to practice. So here is just a very short paragraph. And I have, now I wouldn't do this in the classroom, but since we're practicing, I have chosen the clunk. So here's the sentence. Is there a middle ground between an obsession with aging and an intelligent commitment to a healthier lifestyle. How much time, money, energy, and angst should we devote to the fight against senescence? So see if you can use your fix-up strategies, either reading the sentence again or reading all the sentences or pulling that word apart or using a cognate. See if you can figure out the definition of senescence. And please use the chat feature to write your definition and which fix-up strategy might help you figure it out. And I'll give you just a couple minutes to think about that. Okay, so we have some people using the fix-up strategy too. So they read both sentences, and you can see that there's kind of a big emphasis on aging in that first part, so it makes sense that we would talk about it in the second part. I do see one person noticing that they used a cognate strategy, and actually, unless there is a word in another language, that's what the cognate is for. But a similar word, I would say that would go under fix-up strategy 3, is that you're noticing a word within that word that's familiar to you. So you're seeing that S-E-N, and you're talking about senile. And that's exactly right. And that senile, the prefix S-E-N, means old. So that's where senile comes from. An essent is a root that means beginning to be or showing. So, you know, if we think of effervescence and other words that have that essence in them, that is beginning to be or showing. So here we have showing aging, beginning to age. And that is exactly what you said. And you can use the sentence before. That's probably the most prominent way. And some people maybe already had an idea. In the other, you know, using the sentence before and also combining it with this understanding, you know, I recognize senile in there. That makes me feel more comfortable that it really means aging. So that's exactly what the kids are doing, is they're combining some different strategies, and kids have different ways of thinking about it. And a lot of times, I didn't ask if any of you knew this word before, but you might have. And so kids will do that too. They will give out a definition. It's still important for the group to talk about it and to put that definition back in the sentence to make sure it makes sense. But if there is a student that knows the word, that's very helpful to the group, and they may not need to go through all the fix-up strategies. And when you look on the toolkit in the advanced modules, it does talk a little bit about, well, what do you do if you have a kid who knows every single word all the time? And there are some helpful tips about what to do there. And this was overheard in a classroom, and this is for real. This is in one of our Denver classrooms. So this was a science class, and they were reading out of the textbook, and the piece that they were reading was, "The fishermen of Minamata began protesting against Chiso Corporation in 1959. They demanded compensation and that Chiso quit dumping toxic waste." And Daniel says, "What does compensate mean?" And Alex, and you'll notice he asked about compensate even though it says compensation, so that's interesting that he picked a different version of the word. And Alex, who also speaks Spanish, says, "I'm not sure, but I know what recompensa means in Spanish. It means to pay back someone when you hurt them." "Oh, so you think they wanted money from the company?" And Alex says, "Yeah, that makes sense. I guess it's pretty cool to be bilingual. And I would not put that in my PowerPoint unless it really and truly happened." And that is what he said. I think at that very moment he realized, wow, I have knowledge because I speak Spanish, and my colleague, my friend, doesn't have that same knowledge, and he is learning from me in science class. And that was a really exciting moment, and that's quite common in CSR. So for those of you that work also with English learners, I wanted to show how this strategy works in classrooms that also have the classroom we saw before was a mixed classroom with English learners and kids who are native English speakers. In the video I'm going to show you right now, this was a social studies class that was for kids who were learning English and they spoke all different languages. I think there were maybe like 15 different languages represented in this one class. So here comes the video. Okay, so here you can see that we have students who are learning English. You can hear in their fluency when they're reading that they're not as fluent as the students in the first video that we saw. And what's exciting about this is just the tremendous amount of helping behaviors. So you can see kids leaning over to show each other where the word is, and this is a textbook they're reading, and you see them going through and talking with one another. You also may have noticed they're checking. Does that make sense to you? Does that work for you? And there is some going back and forth of kids saying, oh, wait a minute, I'm done with this word. I want to move on to another clunk that I have. But they finished that first one, and then they moved on to the word insert and came up with a nice definition. I love how they put it back in the sentence, and they were really quite convinced, and that was a pretty good definition, actually, of put. And I think even one of the girls was kind of trying to show how that immunization would go in your nose. So just to give another example of different students using the click and clunk strategy in basically the same way, but different contexts. Okay, so let's think about what clunks might your students have. So here is a small text from Time for Kids that I have used with students, and it goes like this. So have you ever remembered something with your nose? Maybe the smell of hot dogs gets you daydreaming about being at a baseball game, or the smell of burnt marshmallows reminds you of a night around a campfire. Scientists know that the sense of smell can trigger powerful memories. Wouldn't it be cool to somehow bottle those memories? That's exactly what perfumer Mark Krames tries to do. His company, Demeter Fragrance, makes more than 200 scents. Imagine every smell in the world as a musical note, Krames told Time for Kids. We try to combine those notes to make a melody. He has created perfumes inspired by Play-Doh, thunderstorms, and even earthworms. So thinking about the students that you teach, just use that chat feature one more time and type in some some words you think your kids might find as clunks. Go ahead and do that right now. Okay, melody, perfumer, trigger. And some people think their kids might not have any clunks. And so then, you know, one note on CSR, so I'm glad there is somebody whose kids would know all these words. You really have to think about a text that is going to be challenging for students when you're doing a CSR lesson. So you think that you're going to be spending about 50 minutes, 45 minutes to an hour going through a text very, very closely and intensely. So a couple of the things to remember are, one, it's got to be important content. Two, it has to be something your kids want to talk about. So if it's really dry and really boring, they're not going to have lively discussions, especially when we get in a couple of weeks to questions. You don't have that many questions if something's kind of boring and straightforward. And then the third thing is to think about the level of text. So it has to be challenging enough that kids are going to either have some clunks or be challenged by the content in other ways. So if you could just pick something up and read it all the way through, you don't have any questions about understanding, then you don't need CSR strategies. That's something that you can read fluently, you can read it pretty quickly, and you could do another follow-up activity on it without much extra work. So that's not a good one for CSR. So really watching what clunks your kids have might be a good way to tell you, am I in the right level? You know, I'm trying to, you know, with Common Core standards, I know in the classrooms that I'm in a lot, they want rigorous is a big word. They want challenging. They want to know that kids are reading stuff that's really meaty, but not too hard. You know, it's not so hard that they're not going to have any clunks. So I would say one of the big contenders as a word that kids might find difficult is the word trigger. And in fact, that is one that when I was working with kids, that one came up because kids know what trigger means in terms of a gun. But it took some thinking for them to think about how that gun trigger is similar to the kind of trigger that would get you to think of, a powerful memory. I even thought powerful memory for some kids could be a clunk. You know, what does it mean to have a really powerful memory or a strong memory? And then you have to, when you go in your lesson planning, so you're going to go through the text and you're going to think, what words might the kids have as clunks? And you're going to look at them. And then you need to figure out, can these words be figured out with fix-up strategies? So in the words that I have underlined and the ones that you all have, I actually think most of them probably can. I think melody, there's enough about music and combining notes that kids probably would be able to figure out what melody is. I think trigger could be tricky, but I think most kids could figure it out. Now, I'm not sure. I think maybe perfumer Mark Crames. It's a little funny how the word is describing the person. It's possible that you would pre-teach Demeter fragrance because that could be confusing, or even just go over the name of the person, and that might give them enough information that they could figure out what a perfumer is. But sometimes there are words that can't be figured out. And in that case, if you know that in advance and you go up and the kid has a clunk or a group has a clunk, it cannot be figured out with fix-up strategies, you can just tell them the word. You say, you know, that's a really tricky word and I can't figure out with any of our fix-up strategies how that would help us. Here's what the word means, and you move on. If it's a very, very important word and it cannot be figured out with a fix-up strategy, that might be one that you want to pre-teach in the preview so that the kids don't get tripped up and then not understand the whole section or the whole text because they didn't have this key concept. So you want to have this balance, and in your lesson planning, it's very, very quick to just skim through. And then the other thing you want to do is really look at the learning logs that students produce to figure out what clunks they have. and to see if you need to do any additional teaching. Sometimes there's a very difficult clunk and kids don't figure it out while they're reading, and that might be one where you need a little additional instruction. And the ones I just put in orange were the ones I thought maybe you'd want to pre-teach those proper nouns. So what is the teacher's role in all of this? And by the way, that's click and clunk. That's this very powerful reading strategy that if we can get kids to do it in their small groups and also independently, the engagement and the active reading can almost be a visible shift in the classroom. So you might have those kids that come in and they slink back in their chair, and if you say you're going to read something, they just already eyes are glazed over. In CSR, kids really, we see them leaning in more. We see them more active. Sometimes they're tired at the end of class because they've worked so hard to figure out what the text means. So your role, one of the things we have to do is we've got to help kids be okay with finding clunks. So in some classes, in some contexts, for some students, they are too cool to clunk. They think that they don't, you know, that it would look better if they didn't have any clunks, and it's less work if they have no clunks. So we want to model. We want to show kids where we have clunks in our own reading. We want to recognize students who find clunks that are important and recognize how they have worked with their group to figure them out. You can shift the environment in your class so that kids are not what I call too cool to clunk. As I mentioned, you can prepare a list of possible clunks to offer students if they struggle to find their own. Again, if they cannot define the word, if they can define the word, it is not a clunk. If they cannot define it or they have to use the word to define it, it probably is a clunk. And we don't want to challenge students. So we don't want to get into a, well, what does this mean? What does that mean? We want to say to them, tell me the definition of X word as a way to check understanding, but not to face off with the student. We want to support kids to use a variety of fix-up strategies. Many kids become overly reliant on context clues, and they forget the morphemic analysis or breaking words apart, and that's important. We want to encourage students to use their group members as resources. We're going to review that key vocabulary in wrap-ups or in subsequent lessons. And we might have homework or follow-up activities that are going to reinforce those keywords or key clunks that you identify or that kids identify. Another thing that you want to do is you really want to consider how you are approaching your student groups. So the kids are working and they're talking to each other. The teacher does not come in and interrupt. So it's really a lesson in patience for teachers, because kids will model the behavior that you show to them. So if you come in and you interrupt the conversation, you're going to leave and you'll see them interrupting each other. So the first thing to do is really to listen. And then when you give your feedback, you want to, as much as possible, promote collaboration among the group. And I think we have time for this last video. So this is a teacher who's going to help the kids work through the clunk. She's going to give important support, but she's going to be helping them. So here comes that last video of the day.
Karina's like, as a person,
so that's perennial ice, so the word perennial is trying to figure out. Perennial ice is always frozen. If you think about annual ice and perennial ice, it's something that's perennial.
Something that's multi, like it goes on for like a long time.
How do you know that?
Because like after perennial, that is a call.
Sounds like maybe we had some trouble with that. And And Molly, we can just stop the video if it's not working. That's okay.
Okay, thanks.
Okay. I apologize. That one had to be shown remotely. But what you see in this one is that the kids are coming up with the definition, but they're unsure, and the teacher is helping them understand what the word means, but she's also helping them define it for themselves. So I think the first question she asks them is, you know, what do you think? And even though that seems like such a basic question, as teachers, sometimes we just come in, we have so much information, we want to just tell. But asking the kids what they think, what they've already tried, who is the clunk expert, what has the clunk expert already done with the group, those are all very important pieces. And if it looks like the kids are not coming up with the word, it's okay eventually to just tell them. So we don't want to waste everybody's time trying to pull a definition that's not there. But if possible, it's really important to promote that group collaboration. This is a really nice place in the lesson to do that so that the kids really feel valued for the way that they can work together. And that is the click and clunk strategy. And I really hope that some of you will get a chance to try it in the next week before we meet and see how it goes. But let me just tell you a little bit, give you a few grouping considerations, because it is important that kids feel comfortable working together and that the group work is productive. And there are a few ways that really support that group work during CSR. So CSR uses a cooperative learning structure that's very similar to, Kagan cooperative learning or some of the other traditional models where kids have roles. And even as you are introducing the individual strategies, you already want kids to practice them together. That gives them the feeling that we can work together, we can learn from each other, we're stronger as a group than we are on our own, all of those great group work things. And then at times, if you want to do some progress monitoring and having kids do it on their own, that's fine to see how they can apply the fix-up strategies. But in general, we want them to work together and learn from each other. So when it's time to read, students are going to use their cue cards to guide them through the CSR process. First, the leader begins by asking someone in the group to read. And reading is generally out loud and in small groups. And then other students perform their guiding roles, beginning with the clunk expert. And if you haven't had a chance to look at the cue cards, they're on the website. And here is the clunk expert card. So it's a two-sided card. And you can see that it guides. So the first thing the clunk expert says when you're done reading is, who has a clunk? Does anyone know the meaning of the clunk? If no, then they turn the card over. And after a while, the kids rely less and less on the cards. But in the beginning, it's really helpful to guide the process if the kids stick with the script on the card. And the reason is, it will help them really deeply use the strategy, not skip over stuff, and it will also help more kids to actively participate. So when they have used their fix-up strategies, if needed, then they're going to reread the sentence and make sure that definition makes sense, and then they're going to write the definition in the learning log. And again, I'm noting that on the online toolkit, these clunk cards for students are in cue cards for students, including the clunk expert card, are in the student resources. Another thing that many of you may already do, and many of you know, is that when you are using group work, the notion of reflecting on how things went is really important. And we want the teacher to reflect on how the kids are doing, and we also want the kids to reflect. So we have role debriefs for each of the strategies. And sometimes teachers focus on one strategy, and so you might just use the role reflection for that strategy, or you might have each person complete for the role that they had. So, for example, on the clunk group work debrief, kids have to answer. We all have clunks and definitions in our learning logs. Yes, sometimes, and not really. And then they go down. And actually, if you notice, all of these debriefs are things that are part of the click and clunk strategy. So if the kids are doing all of these, chances are they're doing pretty well. And then they write, one thing we did really well today, and one thing we could do better next time. And then the teachers can comment. And sometimes teachers will actually add a fourth column, and they will put their own assessment of how they think the kids have done on that particular strategy. And then you can refer back. So before you start the next lesson, you could take out this debrief and say, okay, remember, look at what your group said they wanted to do better next time, and have that be a focus for your group work today. Someone earlier today asked about grouping. How do we group kids? I didn't ask how long all of you have been teaching, but I do like this comic. So you can see the classroom in the background, and it says, "Can you help me, Mrs. Martin? This wasn't covered in one of my education courses." So the idea here is that grouping is part of an instructional plan. And again, we want kids to be grouped heterogeneously, and we want to think of such things as reading ability, academic achievement, content knowledge, language level, who works well together, if kids have any special learning needs or they need access to technology or they need to be in a certain part of the room. Are there certain kids who are bossy or easily off task or quiet or independent? And you can do this in a very organized and systematic way where you list out your students. Sometimes the very first way you list them is by reading level, you know, using some assessment data that you have. And then you're going to put anything, you know, any notation beside them. So we have Janice, who's this third one, who is gifted and talented and also has a disability label of attention deficit hyperactivity. And then we have a student who was an English learner but has been exited. And the A and P, these are kids who are advanced on the state assessment, partial proficient and partially proficient. And the key here with the grouping is that you want to not group number one with number 10, because sometimes those kids academically are very far away from each other, and it might not be productive. What you want to consider, perhaps, is that Juanita and Jillian might be in a group together. They're a little bit closer. So we still have a range of levels, but we don't have kids who are struggling the very most in the class with your kids who are the most advanced in the class. And ultimately, once you use all of these systematic ways to group your students, you want to look at the groups and you want to see, do these groups look like they're going to work? Have I inadvertently put two kids together that don't work well? And I was just in a class earlier this week, and there were several kids that were in pairs while most of the class was in groups of four. And the teacher was reflecting how well those pairs were working. Those were kids that were really struggling to work productively in their groups. And by putting them in that smaller pair for a while and getting them comfortable working with one other person, that was a really nice way to keep it collaborative for them, but take the pressure off of having to perform and hold it together in the entire group. So I'm looking at the clock. I'm going to just very quickly show you where to find the materials to try CSR. And if you have any questions, you're welcome to even ask them while I'm showing you this. But this is the CSR toolkit for those of you who were not here last time. The website is right here, toolkit.csrcolorado.org. All of the materials were developed with federal grant funding. They are free for all teachers and educators. You just, the very first time, you need to create a login and create an account, and it's going to ask you a few questions, and then once you have that, you can use anything on there that you want. All of the videos I showed today, for example, are on the website. If you want to review Click and Clunk, you can go to the Foundation PD, and that you'll see I've circled the Click and Clunk module, and you can get more information about different pieces and see more videos and examples of students working. And then to introduce Click and Clunk to your students, you want to go to the strategy intro lessons that are in the resources section. And you, in the Click and Clunk section, there's the lesson guide, there's a PowerPoint, and then the reading that students would use. And you're certainly welcome to switch out and use your own reading. And that's just an example. So it's a pretty short lesson. It's 13 slides. But I'll tell you that one of the things to think with Click and Clunk is take your time. Students need a lot of practice using Click and Clunk productively. Don't be frustrated if they don't use it really well right away. Keep practicing with short readings, in a lot of different ways. On the toolkit, there are some practice sheets and some other mini lessons that you can use if your kids need even more practice. And finally, that notion, just make sure those kids put the definition back in the text to see that it makes sense. For next time, which is going to be next week, we are going to debrief Click and Clunk. So if you've had a chance to do it, I'll ask how it went and if you have any questions or you want to share any insights. And I'm going to introduce you to the most difficult strategy for students, getting the main idea. It's actually hard for adults also. So next week is going to be a really good session, I think, to help you help kids get the main idea while they're reading. And we just have a couple of minutes. If anybody has any questions, please feel free to ask them. Otherwise, I think Molly's going to come on and tell you, give you a little bit of information.
Thank you so much, Dr. Boardman, for another great presentation. I see Joanna is typing, so we may have a question or two here. While we're waiting for the questions, I'm going to post the link to the evaluation, so hopefully folks can click on that and take it. It's very brief, and we do appreciate the feedback. And again, please join us next week. We look forward to get to the gist, and we'll give it another minute or two. There we go.
Okay. Within the learning structure, why do you recommend reading out loud as opposed to silent reading? So that's a really great question. And the reason we recommend reading out loud is we want kids to have more eyes on text, and we want kids to be able to access the high-level content even if they're not great readers. So in some classrooms where you've got some kids with learning disabilities and kids who are English learners and kids who are not as proficient, they may not do as well with silent reading. So you can have them all whisper read together. You know your class the best. Some teachers do have kids read silently, but in general, we do recommend that kids read the text out loud. Everybody has the text and everybody follows along. Some teachers even do ask for that whisper reading so that everybody is, you know, reading out loud. They're just sub-vocalizing some of them. I hope that helps.
Okay, and I don't know that there's any more questions. Dr. Boardman, if you'd like to stay on for a minute so we can debrief, that would be great. And everyone on, we hope you'll join us next week. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.